This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 o'clock on this Friday, September 21st. We have two guests with us, as usual, with different political viewpoints to provide their analysis and commentary on the top state, national, and international political news of the week. And we welcome your input, too, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. We will talk about Mitt Romney's comments about the 47% of Americans who don't pay federal income taxes and all the fallout that's caused for his campaign. We'll talk about the ruling against Act 10, the law that's stripped most collective bargaining rights from public workers in Wisconsin, and the reaction to that this week, and whatever else you would like to talk about. Let me welcome in our guests. We have with us Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator from La Crosse and owner of the 2012 Northwoods League Champions La Crosse Loggers baseball team. That's a mouthful, but congratulations, Dan.
Thank you, Joy. It was a great summer, a lot of fun, and great players, and just a great organization all the way around. It's fun to win. It took us 10 years to get there, so we're kind of still reveling in the fun that we had last summer.
Well, that's excellent. You're number one. John Smart is with us, past chair of the Price County Democratic Party and contributor to Fighting Bob and newspapers across Wisconsin. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Senator Kopanky.
Good morning, John.
And you are welcoming in another foreign exchange student this fall. John, this is something you do every year.
Yeah, this is my seventh one. It's a really exciting young man from Egypt, as a matter of fact.
Well, welcome to, what's his name?
His name is Ahmed.
Well, welcome to Ahmed. And let's talk about Mitt Romney's comments first. These comments were leaked by Mother Jones magazine. Let's just take a listen to a part of them.
There are 47% of the people who will vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they're entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But it's an entitlement, and government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what.
So, John Smart, what did you make of those comments?
Well, I think that Mr. Romney must be rueing the day that he ever said such stupid things. As far as the 47%, I don't know about the 47%, but I guess I fall into it because I'm 72 years old and I've been collecting Social Security and living on Medicare. But I also put in 50 years of paying into that when I was in working. And I just don't like being considered to be part of, you know, this entitlement group that he describes.
He did then explain that he probably said that inelegantly, but
that's an understatement, I think.
And Dan Kopanky, do you stand by what Mitt Romney said?
Well, I too would have said that in a little bit different manner than Governor Romney did. And John, you're 72 years old, and you certainly are. Worthy and entitled to the Social Security and whatever else that you may receive. I think that we're talking about some of the 47% that are considerably younger than myself and John that we hope sometime we'll get off the government entitlements and work. And our job is to create, our challenge is to create jobs for these people and get them self-sufficient and drop that number from 47% to 43% or 40% or whatever that number should be where we have full employment. We have somewhat of 24 million who are not employed right now, and that's the challenge, is to get those people working. We're not talking about, certainly I wouldn't be talking about people like myself, who I'm 65, not taking Social Security yet, but 65 or those people that are older that like John and myself.
Yeah, well, John, what about that?
Well, except that he didn't clarify that, obviously.
Exactly.
He said he spoke inelegantly. But I'm afraid that the impression that he gives is that he lumps all of us into the same boat. You know, he lumps me in with what they used to call, you know, welfare mothers and all that kind of stuff. And actually, more than half of that 47% are people like me who are retired and should not be considered as part of the entitlement group. I resent that word entitlement, by the way. That they've gotten out of hand with that one. I think we need to come up with a new phrase to just describe things like Social Security and pensions and various other things, something that doesn't sound so denigrating.
Yeah. Well, it was also noted that there are a lot of low-income people who are working in that 47%, but you know they're paying payroll taxes and other taxes, but just because of their low income are not paying federal income taxes. So, Dan Kopanky, it makes it sound as though everybody that's not paying federal income taxes is considers themselves victims and entitled and that they're lazy and not looking for work. That's not right, is it?
No, that's absolutely not right. And again, our challenge should be to lift those people through opportunities, a better economy where there are better job opportunities for these people. And so that's really the challenge that faces both parties. And the other thing that I would say is, if I was the presidential candidate, of course, which I'm not, but I wouldn't be giving up on 47%. I wouldn't write these people off. If I was in John's neighborhood, I would want to knock on your door, and I would want to at least present myself and what my agenda is and what my platform is, and hopefully get his support. So that's, you know, and I think that, again, the whole thing is I'm sure Governor Romney is regretting ever having to say any of this stuff, because it certainly has been a distraction for his campaign.
Well, sure. And I do you think it's hurt his campaign, has it not, Dan Kopanky? Or do you think this is just this week's, flap and it's going to go away?
No, I think that certainly he can overcome that. But, I mean, there is. The facts are out there that 47% of the people, whether it's people like John or people that are 23 years old that can't find a job, that are on some kind of a government roles. And so, again, we need to both parties need to address that and get those people that are younger that can work to create opportunities for them so that they can be self-sufficient. That really should be the goal for both parties.
So, John, how much do you think this has hurt the Romney campaign?
Well, I think it kind of adds to the list. I keep thinking back to that wonderful line that the former governor of Texas used about George H.W. Bush. And she said, poor George, he was born with a silver foot in his mouth. And in many ways, that applies to Mitt Romney as well. He just manages to say the wrong thing at great frequency. And I'm afraid that he's dragging himself down and his campaign. And as a matter of fact, we now see a lot of Republicans, important Republicans, and conservative speech makers and so forth, like Charles Krauthammer and all the rest, who are saying that they really wish that he would pull his act together because he's not doing a very good job. As far as I'm concerned, he's doing a very good job because the president's polls keep going up, and that's fine with me.
Let's take a call from Dave in Wanakee. Hello, Dave.
Yes, hello. First, I heard something funny. It was Clint Eastwood was wrong and the chair was right. Mitt Romney can do that to himself. But Mitt Romney, I think, when he talks about the 47%, is telling everyone that he thinks of workers as not being important. You know, he's very focused on business owners, small business owners, but he thinks of the workers as being like tools, you know, replaceable. Mm-hmm. That's what I get from that.
Your reaction to that, Dan Kopanky?
No, I don't believe that. And you know, again, the facts are that there are 47% who are on some kind of government assistance, and that's the goal that we should have is to lower that number. And Governor Romney should be focusing on some of the major issues at hand, and not the 47%. And that is, again, the 24 million that are unemployed, which is part of that 47%. We should be talking about the $16 trillion debt. We should talk about Medicare and how Obamacare takes $716 billion out of Medicare. Those are the issues that we should be talking about. We have gas prices that have doubled in the last 4 years under President Obama. We're approaching $4 a gallon. Some places are over $4 a gallon now. Those are the issues that are that's hurting the working people out here, and those are the issues that need to be addressed.
Let's take another call from Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. You know, your opening clip really says it all, because everybody's talking about what a bad week and recent times Romney has had. But since the convention, the Democratic convention, we found out that there are hundreds of thousands dropping out of the employment market. The unemployment's still at over 8%. We've had the HHS secretary reprimanded for campaigning on official business time. Justice Department in complete disarray, 14 people cited. His surge has been declared a failure, and we've had more insider attacks than ever before, and we've had the Middle East erupting with at least 4 Americans killed. And you'd have to ask yourself, would President Obama say to himself, would I be safer going there now than I was 4 years ago? And obviously that's not the case. And you just look at these things and compare it to that video you just played and let off with it, and you have to say, well, yeah, President Obama's had a really good time of it because he looks good in the polls.
All right, Jim, thanks very much. We certainly concentrate on the political news of the week, and this is just one item, and we will talk about a lot of those other issues you just brought up. But John Smart, Obama's got some bad things going for him, too, and here I led with the 47% remark from Mitt Romney. What do you make of that?
Well, I think you can make anything of it you want to, and there's always going to be something wrong, no matter what. And that whole catalog that your caller just made would take the rest of the hour if we wanted to go through it item by item. But I just think that at this point in this campaign, the president is booming. And not only is that, not only are his polls going up, but he's also bringing along people like Elizabeth Warren and Tammy Baldwin and a number of others across the country who are coming along increasingly good also.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with John Smart and Dan Kopanky. This is our regular Friday Week in Review, where we talk about the top state, national, and international political news of the week, and we welcome your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll get to the polls and the U.S. Senate race in Wisconsin, and Tammy Baldwin's a big lead over former Governor Tommy Thompson, and many more issues in just a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. And because it's Friday, after 4, it's your views on the news. You can call in and talk about what you think was the most significant news story of the week or the news story that touched you the most. Your views on the news after 4 this afternoon. This is our Week in Review. We are talking with Dan Kopanky and John Smart about the news of the week. Let's take another caller, Mike in Wisconsin Dells. Hello, Mike. Mike, are you there? Well, I'm sorry, Mike. Wanted to take your call, but since you're not there, let's move on to, you already mentioned, John Smart, that polls show that President Obama has a widening lead over Mitt Romney in national polls and polls right here in Wisconsin. You also mentioned that Tammy Baldwin got a real bump, and she did. She's got a huge lead over former Governor Tommy Thompson in the latest Marquette University poll. She used to be behind. Now she's ahead by double digits. What do you think happened there, John Smart?
Well, as I said before, I think that the president's popularity, which has a great deal to do with the fact that Mr. Romney is such a terrible candidate, but the thing that has been changing is that the president's polls have been going up, and they always talk about political coattails and, you know, who gets to ride on them. I just mentioned Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts and Tammy Baldwin here in Wisconsin, but there are other campaigns across the country where the Democrats were in a very close race with somebody, and the Democrats are pulling ahead, and I think it's a lot of it has to do with presidential coattails again, and I think that it's I think it's great.
What do you think of it, Dan Kopanky?
Well, I think again we're looking at polls. We're 6 to 7 weeks out from the election. So much can happen between now and November 6th, and I think that again, if Tommy stays on message, if Romney stays on message, and the people hear it, they will go to the polls with the results that we're looking for. So again, we're Jim from, I think it was Wanakee, made some great points about you know, what's the message, what's going on as far as the Obama administration is concerned, and we need to stay on that. We need to stay on the 8.1 or 2% unemployment, the 24 million who are out of work, the $16 trillion debt, the gas prices, the Middle East that has seems to have less respect for the United States than ever. How many times have I turned on the TV and seen our United States flag being burned? It's reprehensible, and those are issues that need to be brought to the forefront.
We'll talk a little bit more about that after Ned in Knowlton has his say. Hello, Ned.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think Tammy Baldwin's surge in the polls is significant. I think people of Wisconsin are starting to listen more to her message. I agree that part of it is coattails from Obama, but I think the majority of it is Tammy herself. She's a very effective campaigner, and I think that the people of Wisconsin don't want to really switch from a few years ago, in which until recently we've had two Democratic U.S. senators until 2010, and to go to two Republican senators, and from a 5-3 Democratic majority in the U.S. House from our state to now a 5-3 Republican majority in the state, and then to switch both houses of the state legislature from Democrat to Republican, plus the governor, I think that people are starting to have second thoughts about this massive switch in 2010 from Democrats to Republicans. I think they're starting to think maybe we're not so fond of this big switch, and maybe we should have at least one Democratic U.S. senator and at least one, and we already have one Republican U.S. senator.
All right. Well, do you think Wisconsin wants, bipartisan representation? Dan Kopanky first.
I'm not so sure about that. I think the election, recall election of June 5th, was a huge statement that Wisconsin residents and voters are very intent on having fiscal responsibility come out of Madison. They're asking the same thing to come out of Washington. We're not seeing it right now. I will agree with Ned that Tammy is a very effective campaigner. She's personable. She's likable. And those things certainly are helpful when you're running a campaign. On the other hand, Tommy is proven. He is also a very, very effective campaigner. He's very likable. He can walk into restaurants and talk to people, and people know Tommy. They like Tommy, and he just has to stay on message, which he has. And, again, once that resonates with the voters, I think that we'll see the outcome that my side is looking for on November 6th.
Yeah, your take on this, John?
Well, I agree that Tammy is a remarkably good campaigner. She comes across as extremely earnest and well-meaning, and that relates itself extremely well to everybody. She was up here in Price County for a luncheon that we held for her, and we had about 40 or so people there, and there were several people who said, well, I didn't really know anything about her before. She was somebody that came from Madison, and she was liberal, and that's all we knew. But he said, now I think that we're prepared to support her as much as we can. As far as Tommy is concerned, there was a time when Tommy could have been elected king of Wisconsin, I think. But at this point, the fact that he has been working as a lobbyist in Washington, making millions by representing the big oil firms and the agribusiness firms and the pharmaceutical firms and so forth, and now refuses to divulge his tax returns so that we can see how much money he got and from whom, I think that he's the bloom is off the rose, you might say, and I don't think that I really think that Tommy is going to lose this one, and it's will be kind of a sad end to his career.
Speaking of money, former Governor Thompson was talking about his campaign being broke. He said that before the August 14th primary, his campaign was negative about $1 million. He had to borrow a couple of $100,000 to finish the primary. And, you know, he had to spend a lot of money during the primary, so he hasn't been able to run as many ads. John Smart, is that a part of this?
Well, for anybody who's supported by the Koch brothers and by Sheldon Adelson and some of the others and Karl Rove, to say that he's being outspent by somebody like Tammy Baldwin is really kind of crazy. No, I don't believe that. Tommy could support his own campaign out of his own bank account.
Any react to that, Dan Kopanky?
I'm not so sure Tommy could support his own campaign. I'm not sure about that. And I'm not sure he was ever registered as a lobbyist. I'm not really totally 100% sure on that. But, again, he has a record as governor. And he could have been elected king here a while back because of his record of creating jobs, surpluses in the budget. Wisconsin was open for business. With a welfare reform, he was on the cutting edge of some of this stuff, and that'll carry over as a U.S. senator, and I think that's what people are looking for.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review, talking today with Dan Kopanky, a former Republican state senator from La Crosse, and John Smart, past chair of the Price County Democratic Party. And let's move on to another issue in the news this week as we review all the political news stories of the week during this hour. The Act 10 ruling on Friday, a Dane County judge said Act 10, the law that stripped most public workers in Wisconsin of most of their collective bargaining rights, a judge said that is unconstitutional. Your reaction to that, John Smart?
Well, I agree with the judge, of course, Judge Juan Colas, and I think it's important that people recognize exactly what the judge's ruling was, and I know that reading judicial rulings is not exactly a thrilling entertainment, but I think that we ought to be aware of what the judge was saying. It'll be interesting to see what's going to happen because Attorney General is asking for a delay in that order, and at this point we don't really know what's going to happen. But I would applaud the judge's ruling.
What would you do, Dan Kopanky?
Well, I would hope that there's a stay on his ruling, and would get to the appeals court and the Supreme Court. And I'm confident if that does happen, that the law will be upheld. It's interesting that on Tuesday, September 18th, the front page of the Milwaukee Sentinel has a MPS retiree benefit cost drops by $1 billion thanks to Act 10. And aside from that, that's future. Aside from that, we have savings that have documented because of Act 10 of over $1 billion to taxpayers here in the state of Wisconsin. So it was the right thing to do. We had $3.6 billion deficit we were facing. We haven't seen massive layoffs in the public sector. People have been able to keep their jobs. They're contributing, yes, to their retirement and their health costs, but not in appropriate proportion to what the private sector is doing. So, again, I just hope that there's a stay put on this thing. It's gone through. It's been challenged before and upheld, and I would predict that would happen again.
Why would collective bargaining take away all of those financial numbers of Dan Kopanky?
Well, that's a good question, and really, if you look at the ability of local units of government to bargain and negotiate for health insurance, for one, there have been massive millions of dollars saved throughout the state of Wisconsin when you look at school districts who have rebid their health insurance and gotten away from the WIA Trust insurance. One in western Wisconsin is Prairie du Chien, which I believe saved over $700,000 a year and stayed with WIA Trust for another year. I don't know what they're doing now. I think they're bidding it out again. But this is real money. This is tax dollars money. And yet the benefits to the employees haven't dropped very much at all. And again, they're still better than what we've seen out here as an average for the private sector. So once the word got out on Act 10 and the public employees and the benefit packages and their pay people started looking at their own and saying, wait a minute, I've got to pay for my own retirement. I've got to pay for 20% or 30% or whatever. I don't even have insurance, health insurance. So once that got out, you know, people were looking at it at a different light, and that's why I think we saw the results on June 5th that we did.
John Smart?
I think that something that gets lost in the shuffle here is that why we have those things in the first place. You know, why we have collective bargaining for public employees is because they were historically lower paid, and the governments that were involved could not afford to give them salary increases, so instead of doing that, they gave them benefits. The same thing happened in industry when Henry Ford was working with his Ford plant and the unions first got started. The idea was that it was actually cheaper in the long run to give them good hospitalization and medical care and to give them retirement pensions and so forth than it was to pay them more money up front. And that's where it came from. And I don't think that cutting off of collective bargaining is a healthy way to resolve any kind of a problem. And I think that the judge's ruling is apt. I think that it is. I basically believe that, like the judge did, that it was that it's unconstitutional to remove those things. And I hope that that continues.
Well, you know, Governor Walker's campaign has launched a petition drive. A petition drive was launched yesterday, urging people to show their support for his law limiting collective bargaining in the wake of this ruling on Friday. Governor Walker has called the Dane County Circuit Court Judge Juan Colas a liberal activist judge and said, sign this petition, you know, show him that you support collective bargaining. Is that the way to react to a court ruling on constitutionality, Dan Kopanky?
Well, I think they're trying to get grassroots support for Act 10, and I think, again, they'll get it because the results are in. If you look at the real estate property tax bills from last December, they were flat. First time in a long time, we're projecting a surplus in our budget in the state of Wisconsin for the first time in maybe a decade or more. I mentioned already the close to $1 billion savings that taxpayers have realized because of Act 10 throughout the state. You know, when you get to collective bargaining for public employees, the thing that kind of dumbfounds me is most of these public employees, a large percentage of them, are dealing with local boards. Who many times are their neighbors, people they voted for. And so for a public employee to go in front of their neighbors and plead their case for benefits or wage increases or whatever the case may be, I just don't see that as a bad thing. And we elect these people, and again, many times these public employees are electing their neighbors to represent them on various boards and councils. And they go in before them, people that they've, in many cases, helped elect, and are dealing with them for negotiating with them for their benefits. I just can't see that as a bad thing.
Well, John Smart, should it matter if Governor Walker gets a lot of signatures or campaign contributions for this petition drive? In terms of whether should it matter if a lot of people sign his petition in the constitutional challenge of Act 10?
No, I don't think it should matter at all. A group of citizens, if he wants to use this as campaign fodder to try to raise funds for his campaign, fine, so be it. I don't think that's the point. The point is that we have an independent judiciary, and the judge in this case decided the way he did, and I agree with the judge. I think it was probably kind of bad form for the governor to make such a crass comment about the judge's ruling, because, as I said, judges are supposed to be independent people, and they follow things according to what the prescriptions are, the strictures of the law, and I don't see any problem with that.
Well, you know, there will be also a rally tomorrow at the state capitol organized by conservative groups. They're going to protest these recent decisions made by Dane County judges, including the ruling against Act 10, rulings that have questioned the constitutionality of voter ID and some other issues. The conservatives groups that are doing this are saying this is proof that these, you know, liberal judges are abusing their power and being activists from the bench. John Smart, your reaction to that?
Well, I challenged them to get anywhere near the kind of crowds that they got in Madison at the time that we were trying to develop the recall election. And also, I wanted to point that out about the recall election, that there were an awful lot of people, certainly up here in the Northwoods, people that I talked to, who said that they were not really pleased with what Governor Walker was doing for the state or doing to the state, but that they did not think that recall was an appropriate response. And there were people that voted against that simply because they were against the idea of recall. And for Walker to now say that this is proof that the citizens of Wisconsin are totally behind him, I think is kind of silly, but then that's politics for you. And I just don't think it makes that much difference.
Your thoughts on the rally at the Capitol tomorrow against the Dane County judges, Dan Kopanky?
Well, again, I think that's a perfect right that we have to get together and speak. You know, where we stand on the issues. I think that's just fine. I know that during the rallies last year at Madison at the. From the other side, there were so many people there. Yes, indeed, so many people were brought in from other areas. That's for sure. And but I never challenged them to have a right to walk around the Capitol and express their feelings on a certain issue.
Maureen in Mineral Point is with us. Hello, Maureen.
Hi there. I just wanted to challenge something. Perhaps I misunderstood, but I believe it was implied earlier that school districts were more able as a result of Act 10. To switch from more expensive to less expensive insurance plans. And in Mineral Point, I'm on the school board. We had already switched from WIA Trust to Dean Care a couple years before before Act 10. And we had already, our married teachers with families were already paying 10% of their insurance plan. That was done through responsible negotiation in a small town where we know people that are sitting across the table from us. And I think some of these statements that are a little blown out, that this gave more opportunity than it actually did. The other thing I want to point out is because we were fiscally responsible, our school district was cut over $400,000 last year. The tools, which were supposed to take care of that, in our case only took care of half of it. So because we had been a responsible board and negotiated well, we were left with a deficit.
I get it. And, Maureen, thank you very much. So, Dan Kopanky, Mineral Point did not need Act 10 to switch insurance companies and save money. And, in fact, she feels that it hurt Mineral Point in the long run.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for a minute. It wasn't 100% of the local units of government and school boards that were able to do this. That's for sure. I understand that. But, you know, the facts are out there, the numbers are out there, that it was $1 billion in savings, whether it was because of some school districts had already switched out or not. There was those savings statewide, and that's real money. And, again, we came into a situation with $3.6 billion deficit that's staring us in the face, and something had to be done. And we did it without raising taxes. I mentioned previously that our property taxes were flat last December for the first time in a long time. We're projecting a budget surplus right now for this biennium. And there's a much better feeling about Wisconsin amongst the business sector. And that means growing jobs for the people out here, some of those 24 million who are unemployed. That is all very, very positive. And maybe we can get down the road here and right this ship. And things will look a lot better for not only school districts, but other municipalities and other units of government as well. But in the meantime, we had to tighten our belt. And certainly there's people that are affected by that. But if you go into the private sector, we can go into all of the jobs, all of the layoffs, all of the businesses that were suffering because of the downturn starting in 2008. It wasn't just in the public sector. That is for sure.
Do you have anything to add to that or counter, John Smart?
Yes, excuse me, but yes, I do, as a matter of fact. Somehow it always seems like the ones who are going to take the hit are the teachers, and I just resent that. I don't believe that there is anyone in our society that is more important than our teachers. If we're talking about the economy being in a downturn, and what do we need to get out of it again? What we need are well-educated workforce. And we're not going to get that by reducing teachers' salaries and by reducing the money that is spent on schools. What we need, we should be putting more emphasis on those things instead of cutting them back. and I just do not like that at all. And I don't like not allowing the teachers. I served on the Park Falls School Board also for nearly 10 years, and I can tell you that we used to meet with the teachers on a regular basis. The teachers are members of the community as well, and they are probably, as I said, among the most important members of the community. And so it just it offends me when I find that this government in the state of Wisconsin is turning the teachers out and not not treating them according to their responsibilities.
Let me get a quick react from both of you on the end of the Chicago teachers strike this week. John Smart?
I'm sorry that there had to be a strike, and it was interesting to follow it in all the different kinds of news media. What it really boiled down to is the fact that the teachers were, by and large, not striking because they wanted more money. They were striking because they wanted more say in how the schools are run. And to a degree, that's perfectly true. I know, again, from being a school board member, that the teachers are the ones who are there every day, all day long, and they're the ones who know best about what's required and what's needed in the schools. I'm glad that the teacher strike in Chicago was resolved, and I'm sorry that there had to be conflict about it, but it could have been a whole lot worse.
Dan Kopanky?
Just to back up a little bit to comment on some of John's statements there, K-12 education has been number one as far as a budget item in Wisconsin for a long, long time. We value, both sides value education. We understand the benefits of a good K-12 and higher ed education system, and we do have a good one here in Wisconsin. And Act 10 did not target teachers. They happen to be public employees. I was certified to teach at one time. I love the classroom. I love the kids as the teachers do. And there was no intent here to target teachers in Act 12, or excuse me, Act 10 at all. So getting to the Chicago, it's unfortunate. I know there were headlines that there were no winners in the Chicago strike. There was only losers, and that was the 350,000 kids that weren't able to go to school for 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever the number of days are, there's got to be better ways. There's got to be better ways of solving these kind of conflicts, and walking off the job is not one way.
You know, I wanted to get you both to a quick react, because we're coming up on our break, to State Superintendent Tony Evers gave his State of Education address yesterday, and he called on the legislature to reinvest in education in the next budget. And he had some other proposals, including changing the school funding formula. Dan Kopanky, is Tony Evers right?
Well, obviously, you know, he's a superintendent, and he would want more money, and nobody can fault him for that. Again, with the last budget, we did have those cuts that went out to local units of government, and including school districts, and obviously they're hurtful. But again, we had to do something. Something had to be done when you're facing a $3.6 billion deficit. And we had stolen in the previous administrations, not only the Doyle, but the previous ones, we have stolen from funds. We have taken from the transportation fund. We have taken from so many funds that we were out. The cookie jars in Madison were empty, and we had to do something. Now, with a downturn in the economy, we had to make adjustments, which we've made. Now, hopefully this economy can come back under the right leadership, and there will be extra money, as Mr. Evers wants, for at K-12. But until that time, we all are living with our belts tightened.
John Smart.
Yeah, when I used to also be on the board of the Wisconsin Alliance for Excellent Schools, and we've been proposing for years now a revamped school funding formula. And again, I go back to what I said before, that there is nothing more important that a society does than educate its young people. It's the only way that we have of getting ahead of the economics curve. And to suddenly just say, well, you know, we have to make cuts somewhere. And Dan mentioned that cuts had to be made to the teachers as well as other public employees, except that they were not made to the firemen and the police departments. And it was maybe only coincidental, but their unions, the firemen and the police unions, were the ones that were supporting Scott Walker. And they were left out of that discussion, which I thought was kind of strange. So in other words, the teachers were expected to take cuts, but the policemen and the firemen were not. It's almost like, well, they're more important than the teachers. And I reject that idea.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine with John Smart, past chair of the Price County Democratic Party, and Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator from La Crosse. We'll have our Week in Review quiz question and review more news of the week in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Here is our Week in Review quiz question. This week, two TV personalities announced they would debate each other for charity in a live event next month that is dubbed The Rumble in the Air-Conditioned Auditorium. Who are the personalities, both of them? What two TV personalities will be debating issues next month in a event dubbed The Rumble in the Air-Conditioned Auditorium? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We'll give you 5 minutes to call in or email in your answer. We'll randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will have the opportunity to win one of the books we featured on the program recently. This is our Week in Review, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top political news of the week. Today we are talking with John Smart and Dan Kopanky. And let's talk about some international news and the impact here at home. Protests continue following the attacks on U.S. interests in Egypt and Libya. They have spread to other parts of the world, to Pakistan and Indonesia. It looks like that these countries are bracing for more violence today, in part over the U.S.-made film that criticizes the Prophet Muhammad. Some are saying that it was a reaction to this film that caused the death of the U.S. ambassador in Libya. Others say that this was a planned attack by al-Qaeda. Dan Kopanky, do you have thoughts on what's happening in the Mideast?
I think it's a sign of weakness when we have these types of attacks take place. We weren't prepared, obviously. It was the anniversary of 9/11. I've heard that some of our guards are not allowed to have ammunition in their weapons or even carry a weapon. I've heard that. There are just a lot of things that need to be changed. It seems to me, again, that it's a sign of weakness that as we're viewed by some of these foreign governments, and it's not acceptable. Again, I've mentioned the number of flags that have been burned that we've seen on TV. And I think of all the United States military veterans that have served now, are serving now, and have served in the past. And my heart goes out to them because so many of them lost their lives defending that flag. And now we'll see what's happening in the Middle East. And it's deplorable.
Sign of weakness, John Smart?
No, I don't think so. It's a very complicated story, and it really is. And by the way, I have seen that film that is causing all the commotion, and it's stupid, and it's childish and all of that, but it is insulting to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and it's not necessary to have done that. It's interesting, too, to point out, I told you I have an Egyptian student living with me, and he told me that in Egypt, the most revered man in the world is Barack Obama. So we tend to think that if such a thing happens in Cairo or if such a thing happens in Benghazi or wherever it is, that all of the people of that country are in some way against us, and that's far from being the truth. In fact, in Benghazi, where the ambassador was killed, if you looked on the news, there were photographs of people carrying around signs that said, "We did not do this. This wasn't us. We like the U.S. We're happy that the U.S. helped us to overthrow the government of Gaddafi." So it's a very complicated story. And as I said, whoever made that film, and I don't know who did, and nobody knows at this point, and they're still working on trying to figure that out, but it was clearly the intent was to rile up a whole bunch of people. But I wanted to point out again that it's the small number of people in those countries that are actually doing the rioting. It's far from being a government policy or whatever. We also need to take into consideration the fact that those countries, Egypt and Libya in particular, have just undergone their own revolutions. They've overthrown their existing governments, which were strong men dictators, and they're trying to come through that into a democratic future. And it's very confusing over there right now. And I just think that we need to look at these things a little more carefully.
Also this week, the Office of the Inspector General concluded that the Operation Fast and Furious, the undercover operation that allowed U.S. guns to be walked into Mexico, was a risky strategy that did not adequately take into account the significant danger to public safety that it created. But it also went on to find that Attorney General Eric Holder was not aware of the strategy or the tactics used in Fast and Furious. John Smart, your reaction to that?
Well, I'm sure it's going to be hard for people to understand that because we tend to make sure that the administrator who's responsible for whatever agency is involved is the one who has to take the fall. And in this case, that would be Attorney General Eric Holder. But we have to assume, too, that at the Justice Department is a vast, vast bureaucracy. And to think that the Attorney General has his finger on everything that's going on in the whole country through the Justice Department is probably not realistic.
And Dan Kopanky, your reaction to it?
First off, just on that film, I think it would be naive to think that all this rioting in the Middle East has been caused by this one. I think it's 14 minutes. I haven't seen it. But I just don't think that's right at all. These are planned attacks. This is Al-Qaeda. These people are out to destroy America and our way of life. There's no question about that, and we should be taking that very, very seriously. Again, back to this Eric Holder and Fast and Furious, I think it was Truman that had, on his desk, the buck has to stop someplace, and it stops there. Somebody has to be responsible. This was a very inappropriate, ill-conceived plan, and it backfired on us, and somebody has to own up to it.
Well, that's one more state issue as time is running short. There were mining hearings this week in the state legislature. We have Democratic State Senator Tim Cullen chairing this committee, hearing from different experts. One mining expert said there is a middle road, that there can be mining in the North Woods with adequate regulation. Very briefly, John Smart, your thoughts on that?
I think that's entirely possible, and in fact, Senator Bob Jauch has talked about that over and over again, that he would be perfectly willing to listen to some kind of a reasonable compromise on that legislation, and Dale Schultz had agreed to go along with him on that one, and I think that we need to do that. We also need to take into consideration the tribes who are up here, because whether it's actually happening on tribal land or is not necessarily the question, because it affects the tribal water source. And as well as everybody else's water source, and that was one of the real concerns up here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, yes, we need to have this all completely rethought out, and we need to make our mining regulations as stringent and as forceful as those in Minnesota and Michigan, which is why that so-called Gogebic Taconite Company was coming here in the first place. Because our laws were less stringent.
Very, very briefly, Dan Kopanky, about the restart of mining hearings.
I think we have to have it. I think it has to be done in an efficient manner. I think we've gone through this all of last year and had a lot of discussion, a lot of negotiating. I think it's time that we move on this because, again, these mining companies are going to bring a lot of jobs to Wisconsin. It's going to help our economy. We have to be mindful of our environment. I think we've got safeguards in place. What the private sector is looking at is some kind of certainty and a timeline so they can get this done and get people to work.
We are out of time. The answer, though, to our quiz question, what two TV personalities will be debating each other for charity? Jon Stewart and Bill O'Reilly are going to have this debate coming up on October 6th. So who's going to win? Is that going to be Jon Stewart or Bill O'Reilly, John Smart?
I think Jon Stewart is a clear winner under any circumstances.
And I'm assuming you're going with Bill O'Reilly, Dan Kopanky?
Absolutely. This will be a standoff between me and John. It's going to be O'Reilly.
All right. Thank you both very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
We have John Smart and Dan Kopanky with us during this edition of the Week in Review. And congratulations, by the way, Nicole, for getting the Week in Review question correct. Thanks for joining us. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.